Phoenix is hot and water is wet. You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller. So Foz, United is going to serve a deep dish pizza in economy.
I think this is a start of a new trend of just carving everyone to death so they sleep.
and don't realize the experience. Is that,
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, as you're stuffed into your economy, basic economy seat, you know.
I mean, so if I've got to remember, it was like a garlic and spinach pizza or something. So I'd like to know who thought serving a bunch of garlic
on a plane
on a confined space was a wise idea.
Well, and it's going to be pizza coming from Uno Pizzeria and Grill, and that's
which is a
famous place. Yeah, it's a famous place in Chicago. And they haven't said how much it will cost, have they?
No, I mean, no, not at all.
Probably $12 or something.
$12, $15. I mean, it's just whatever they feel like it's that day.
And it's like the least, besides garlic being a bad idea on an airplane, it's like the least pizza-y pizza. Like spinach and garlic. No one goes to Uno, Pizzeria Uno, and orders a spinach and garlic pizza.
Well, you know, the challenge is like, you know, what would you get, right? Like you could have meat, but then you're automatically excluding a lot of potential people from eating it.
True.
And the other challenge is, we've all had airline food. We know how well it comes out. Do you really want them attempting to cook meat on a pizza?
Not really.
Yeah. So in some ways, I'll at least commend them for going middle of the road. You know, they'll appeal to a much larger audience and it'll be harder to screw up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this comes on the heels of the announcements that we talked about last show where United's going to be offering meals to Economy Plus customers for free on the Transcon routes. Mm-hmm. And so this change right here with the pizza comes right after that. And it's a little, I mean, it's interesting. It seems like they're trying to compete with Delta and offer something, I don't want to say exotic because pizza's not exotic, but something, what's the word I'm looking for? Different.
Yeah. I mean, it's not chicken or fish.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it'll be interesting, right? You know, truth be told, I haven't been on United on a 319 or 320 recently in economy. But for the longest time, they had challenges with not having enough space for adequate amounts of food for the longer flights.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they frequently on Newark, Portland, they would run out of food, I don't know, five rows back.
Yeah, like any of the transcons.
Yeah.
Or even like some of the long, like to Denver, like anything half more than halfway across the country, they'd run out of food. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, it's fascinating to me that they're expanding the portfolio, which is great, but will they actually be able to accommodate the entire cabin?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. How many pizzas are they going to have? Three? Like,
yeah.
The first row takes all three and that's it.
Well, and I've done a number of flights where I was in the second or third row and I like asked for something and it already be gone.
Yep. Yep.
So it'll be interesting. I mean, I commend them for trying something different. Well, but as with everything, it comes down to let's see how the execution is.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of like how we feel with all stuff United, right? It comes down to execution and implementation.
I think I feel that way about all airlines, period.
Yeah, yeah. Delta, let's talk about this new suite, the Delta One suite, which is on a limited number of their planes. There is going to be.
Limited, like three routes announced between now and like the first quarter of next year.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think limited is an understatement. Yeah, so it'll be, you know, so it'll roll out on the 350s. The 350s are set to, Detroit, Tokyo? No, I can't remember.
Yep. Detroit, Tokyo, yep.
But I can't remember if it was Narita or...
It's Narita. They only fly Haneda out of Minneapolis and LA.
Okay. Right. So Detroit and Narita will get it at the end of October, October 30th. Detroit Seoul will get it in mid-November. And then the third route is Detroit-Beijing in January.
Of 2018, yeah. And these are going to feature the Delta One suites and their new Premium Select.
Right. So here's the other thing, right? So Detroit Seoul will go – alternating days. Oh, excuse me. It starts alternating days on the 18th. It goes daily on December 16th. And Detroit Beijing starts out as alternating days. And from February 23rd, it goes daily. But it'll have premium economy as well as the new suites, but it's a fewer number of suites. So there's only 32 seats.
Gotcha. And I mean, it's the premium economy is – it's a little confusing, right? Because now Delta is going to have two products for their economy plus or premium economy experience, right? They'll have this – what is it? Economy comfort, right? Or comfort plus – what is it? I don't even know the names of them anymore. Delta economy plus comfort. Economy comfort. Which is pretty much just a coach seat. It's like United's Economy Plus. It's just a coach seat with more recline and a little bit more leg room. So it's a little bit better than United's seat. And then you're going to have – they're going to have a true premium economy product in on the A350s and on the 777s that will get the product. You think that's going to cause some problems as far as product confusion for people who are trying to book these things?
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
I mean, right, like, and like, especially like on alternating days.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, so if they're doing two routes that are alternating days through January, you might book one product. Like, are they going to alternate the fares on the alternate days?
Yeah. I mean, it's really going to confuse people. I mean, you think about just selling it is going to be a pain.
Yeah. Just think about the fare filings.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how, let's see how the execution goes.
Yep. Let's see here. I'm reading – Seth actually wrote an article we'll include in the show notes about this for Runway Girl Network and how they're selling these Comfort Plus seats as a separate booking class and doing some, you know, premium economy type stuff on the routes. It's interesting because they show, like, say through an OTA like Google Flights, they both show as premium economy products with the same pitch, even though one is through Detroit on the new product and one is through Seattle on the old Comfort Plus. So just see a lot of pissed off people.
Yeah.
Expecting one thing and getting something else.
It'll be interesting. I mean, because it's not just the economy challenge, right? But think about it. Like if someone's thinking they're booking a Delta One suite, and get the herringbone 777 seat, they're going to be a little disappointed.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, because that 777 seat is the ones – those are the ones that face the aisle, right? Like your feet are out in the aisle.
Yeah.
Those are not a nice – it's not necessarily a nice product. It's not it's not reverse herringbone, which seems to be kind of the seat that everybody likes.
Yeah, I mean I don't like the Delta product at all.
You don't even like the reverse herringbone seats?
Well, they don't have a reverse herringbone.
On the A330s.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's fine because when the reverse herringbone, I'm more used to the Zodiac seat. That's not bad, but I've only done it once, and there's something that didn't just sit right with me about that seat, and I don't remember what it was.
I think that's the only seat I would like, really.
Yeah. It's been so long since I was on it, so I can't give you a firm answer on it.
Gotcha. I don't know what to think about this. I wonder if Delta is making – they're jumping ahead of themselves and trying to explain the product online but not giving enough effort. It seems kind of like half-hearted, right? Like, hey, we're going to put it on these flights. We don't feel like retrofitting all these other planes because there's no plans to retrofit the A330s, the 76s. I mean, I'm not even sure you could retrofit the 76s. And get a meaningful number of premium select seats in the plane.
Well, I mean, they'll go from what? It's 26 seats now, right? Or 28 seats now? They'll go to 14.
Oh, yeah. So it would cut the cabin in half is what you mean for business class.
Yeah. But I mean, the reality is that in theory, they're going to get rid of them at some point. But I they don't really have anything on the order books to replace them with.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the 330 Neos, but they're still a bit away.
Yeah, I wonder how I kind of made this comment on Twitter. It seems like the industry is we're going back to where we were 10 years ago, where business has become the old first class cabin. And now we've got these premium economy products that are coming out that are basically old school business class seats, recliner seats with leg rests and stuff. And premium economy is essentially like what we have now. In the economy, it's just regular old economy that's gotten worse.
Yeah, I mean, you would think the airlines would learn that what they're gonna end up doing is they're just creating the business class products to be such an elite product that corporations are not going to want to pay for it.
Yep.
And thus they're going to end up in the same problem they were in the late 90s.
Yep. Where they have a business, have a first class product that's not being sold.
Yeah, it'll be employee class all over again.
Yep.
Just like American.
And then people will be complaining that premium economy is not really premium and they need lie-flat seats there. And we'll just go through this whole cycle again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like this whole – it's amazing, you know, no matter how much things change, they stay the same.
Yep. Yep. And we should say that Seth is in Paris right now. He's at Le Bourget Airport at the Paris Air Show, and that's why he's not recording with us tonight. But he's going to come back and probably have tons of information on – the A350-1000, the 737 MAX, the 787-10. There's all these planes are being shown there at the air show with tons of press conferences and stuff. So, yeah, maybe we'll get a little insight into the Delta product.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it beat Polaris last year for an award.
Oh, man. And now Polaris, we should also mention Polaris is being, Seth and I talked about this before, you know, United does not have the patent on the Polaris design outside the United States. And it is now being used by El Al is going to put it on their 787s. And there's another carrier, I believe Air France, is putting it on some of their new planes.
Well, there's a very big assumption that they can actually produce them.
That Zodiac can actually deliver them?
Because think about it, right? So United has a very large order of them. So sure, let other people order them, but Zodiac can't even fill the backlog they have now.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about the 777s last time, and saying, you know, how many are still in storage. We think one's in storage, but we don't know if that's fact.
You mean the W?
Yeah, right. 77W. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, think they have orders in for the 76s and the 777s. Right, outstanding orders. That's a lot of seats that are in the backlog.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, I mean, in some ways, it's like, sure, you know, go sell it to other people. But by the time the other people can get it, United will have had it out there on the majority of their fleet for quite some time.
Yep, very true. Very true. And I'm not sure a seat is enough to make people book away. I mean, honestly, El Al is just now catching up with other airlines. I mean, they're just now announcing a lie flat seat in business. It's been a kind of a junk product up till now.
Right.
So anyway, let's talk about Cuba for a minute. So some new Cuba policies are coming into effect. We don't know what exactly they are going to be, whether this administration is going to kind of backtrack on the previous administration's Cuba policies and changes that were slowly being implemented where travel was a little more open, or if there'll just be incremental changes where travel's a little more restricted. But you found something about educational travel. What was that?
I just had it. So basically, you know, what the comment that I read was that traveling to Cuba in the future will still be allowed for the same 12 authorized categories with one exception. Educational travel must be with a group, which must include an agent who makes sure everyone follows the itinerary. That can be a guide from a travel agency.
So you basically can't go off script and disappear and do your own thing in Cuba.
That is what it sounds like.
Which I think is what some people were doing. I mean, I think people have booked these guided tours and then, just wandered off and done their own thing. And then at the end, they get on the plane and go back. And yeah, they were there for an educational tour. They have the paperwork to show it, right?
Yep. Now you're going to have a signed slip saying that you did.
Yep. Do you think that we could see potentially like a full pullback from the Cuba policies?
It's possible. I mean, it is definitely possible, but look, there's always an end game. What the end game is, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right? This could just be a negotiating tactic to get more favorable terms for the U.S. Who knows?
Yeah.
We've seen so many of these things over the years where something gets leaked as coming or announced and then it never gets executed the same way because it's it ends up somewhere a little more moderate or in the middle of what was announced initially.
Yeah, and who knows kind of what since we don't know the motivating factor behind all this, we don't know what they're targeting as far as travel, travel policies. If it's something like we want to keep all travel restricted, then they say we're going to cut off travel to all of Cuba. Or if they're just saying, well, we want to keep the old policies in place where you could go for educational purposes or medical purposes, the 12 that you listed, the 12 that you said. I don't know enough to really make a definitive answer. I have a bad feeling. I have a feeling we'll see something bad come out of this. Are they saying if you're booked now, you're okay? Like, when would this all take place?
If you booked before Friday, you were fine before they announced it. Okay. So you'll get grandfathered in if you were already booked before that, but it's anything since then.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool. Kind of late breaking news today. I saw it this morning. Wasn't really sure what to think about it, but it actually was posted like 3 days ago. British Airways is saying that they're going to go on strike over the next couple of weeks, the cabin crews specifically. And it sounds like this is like mixed metal. So if you're part of the mixed fleet, I guess. So that would be the mainline aircraft, right? Then you could potentially be included in this strike. So July is when this would take place, like right at the beginning of July. So you might want to check your bookings if you're flying British Airways. And
I had not even heard that.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people had. It's been on some British Airways news, some British news sites. And let's see here. I'm going to read. There's a new update on The Independent, which is news story outlet.
I guess it's okay. Their systems went on a strike a couple weeks ago.
That's true. So the way they're saying that the mixed fleet cabin crew will be striking if they go through with it between the 1st and 16th of July.
It's really interesting. BA is just getting beat up all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, this has to hit their brand pretty hard, right?
Well, just as they're starting to recover. Because the other thing, initially they told everyone they would need to file claims, and then they were getting pressured into automatically compensating people, and I don't know where that ever ended.
Mm-hmm. After the outage?
Yeah, because they didn't want to just automatically pay people because they were hoping that they'd have a number of people who wouldn't even think to file, so they'd be able to save some money. It's an interesting tactic. But, it's funny. Since then, I've been reading random things, and Cruise is despised by, everybody. So from passengers to frequent flyers to employees, nobody likes him. It's almost like Smizek.
Mm. Interesting. So there's just bad morale all around.
Yeah. It is what it is. But, you have to think about it. Like, someone like BA, right? They own 60, 70% of not just the traffic from Heathrow, but the traffic from the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you do? Right? Like, you in the U.S., you have alternative options. You've got other carriers. You don't really have that there.
Yeah, there's not a ton of options. There's low cost, right? Ryanair. But they're usually operating from other airports around London, not Heathrow.
Right, but BA can't book you on that.
Yeah. You've got the other European carriers, Swiss, Lufthansa. And we kind of witnessed what happened during the outage, right?
Right.
Within hours of that outage, all of the Swiss and Lufthansa flights to mainland Europe and then onward to other destinations were booked full.
Yeah, and that was just a day.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how long will the strike be? It'll be interesting because it's one thing to strike for a day, but that would even be tough to recover because now we're in summer. As we all know, loads are very high in the summer. So you have a lot less elastic availability.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you've now put this kind of burden on the system for another basically 2 weeks. And that probably will take another 2 weeks after that to resolve completely by the time you've flown everyone you need to fly.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man.
I always wonder about the unions of what they're thinking because most people don't associate themselves with that, with the cause of the union. They just find it as an inconvenience. So they're really just alienating themselves some more.
Yeah. I mean, they're holding the airline accountable. That's really what it's about. It's not about getting passengers to side with them, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're trying to cause pain. The reality is they're trying to cause pain to the airline, but they're really causing pain to the passengers.
Yeah.
What's going to happen is those passengers, well, you know, if they have a miserable experience like that, they're like, well, why did I even choose to fly BA? I can just go to Ryanair.
Yeah, but I think it's deeper than that because like you said, there's not a lot of other options.
No, the next time they fly.
But what I'm saying, though, is like even those people that say, I'm going to fly Ryanair, well, if they need to go international, United States somewhere, the only other option really is Virgin Atlantic or to book on Lufthansa Swiss or someone else.
Norwegian,
I guess. Yeah, I guess Norwegian now is flying all over the place. Yeah. So,
but I think what the unions miss is things like this give opportunities to new carriers to come in and capitalize on the weaknesses.
And sadly, I don't think they're concerned about that as much. I think they're concerned about their pay or whatever benefit they're trying to renegotiate.
Absolutely, but I think the point that I'm making is the unions rarely think about the long game.
Yeah.
And this is like why a lot of these legacies have been suffering.
Because the unions are not taking into account the fact that their actions can impact long-term sustainability of a carrier due to lack of loyalty.
Yeah, I mean, look at historical U.S. airlines, like Eastern, TWA. What drove these things into the ground? The unions.
And deregulation, arguably.
Well, deregulation, but they survived. Like Eastern was around until 91.
True.
Right? They suffered. But the unions, in the end, it was the strike that killed them. That last strike.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Interesting stuff, man.
So
yeah. Well, so if our listeners are flying BA, I'd love to hear kind of how if you're preemptively rebooking or finding other options, because it doesn't sound like BA is going to refund anything preemptively. They're only going to do it after the fact, based on what I'm reading, which is kind of crappy, but. Yeah. So if you're flying BA, let us know how your experience is in the next, 4 weeks. Love to hear from you. Oh, man, this could be a short show. We've gone through topics really quick. We don't have Seth here to tell us how it is.
Well, we could try to babble.
I'm not going to babble. I'm not good at babbling. Phoenix is hot. And water is wet.
Yes, Phoenix is apparently going through a bit of a heat wave.
Just a tad.
Just a tad.
I saw a news report before doing this show. There was like the runway temperature, the concrete temperature was up to 151 degrees.
Jeez. Wow. Yeah, so they're canceling flights because they just don't, the runways aren't long enough to take for the planes to take off.
Oh, and yeah, I mean, I think their max operating temperature for like some of the Bombardier airplanes is like 118. And I think they said it's going to get up to 120. So they even if the runway was 2 miles longer, the plane still wouldn't be able to take off.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, couldn't happen to a better airline.
Nah. Man. I mean, so this actually happened before, back in the 90s. Like I think it was 1990. Phoenix had a 122 degree day, and it grounded planes for days because they couldn't take off in it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's fascinating in some ways, and because that'll impact not just American, but also Southwest.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm guessing this is mostly for the peak hours, so like noon to 6 probably in Mountain Time. It's probably going to be the worst.
Yeah, I think the story that I read is like they're encouraging people to fly between after 3. But I mean, if it peaks at noon, it still takes a while for everything to cool off. So I don't know how by 3 you'd be.
No, I think they're saying the flights that are affected will be the ones that take off between 3 and 6
I just misread that.
Yeah, peak time is basically 4 p.m. That's like the hottest it'll be.
Yeah.
Around 4.
Okay.
So I'm guessing they're giving it till 6:30 to cool off, and they'll start taking flights off again. So I mean that is a peak, but that's peak travel time, right? 3 to 6 p.m. is the evening bank of flights.
Well, and Phoenix is a big connecting city for both Southwest American. It's not like it's an O&D market. So, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see how these airlines handle, right? Do they just go into delay mode like Delta, or do they actually outright start canceling more stuff?
So I'm going to go look. I want to look right now. I'm going to take a short – I'm going to play producer. I'm going to go to AmericanAirlines.com and see what they say, because I think they've already started canceling things preemptively for tomorrow because today was so bad. Let's see here. Where is there – this is kind of like an on-air – test. I want to see how easy it is to find the information about travel alerts. Okay, I found the alerts. There's thunderstorms. Nothing is said about Phoenix.
AA is the worst when it comes to waivers and alerts.
Like, all it lists is everything in the Northeast, which there are storms today in the Northeast.
But yeah, some nothing doozies of a storm.
Yeah, I saw the I saw the arrivals into Newark going south.
I have never in all my life seen arrivals coming in from the Jersey Shore from Europe.
Yeah, they like made that hard right turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. Let's see here. Yep, so the Phoenix News New Times has an article, but there is nothing on the American Airlines website. So that's already canceled 43 flights for tomorrow.
Crazy.
So, yeah. Fun times.
Yeah.
What else do you want to talk about, Foz? We got time. We got nothing but time.
I don't know, like I flew American last week. It was like one of the most disappointing experiences I've had on a business class flight, international business.
Where were you headed in?
Manchester to Chicago.
Interesting.
They, I mean, it was funny because they, I overheard the flight crew take meal orders from the cockpit before any of the passengers.
That's kind of normal though, right? Because don't they get first choice basically?
Generally, they have their own meals.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, they pick from a menu, and it's kind of there for them.
Right. No, this was off the business class menu.
Oh.
So by the time they got to the passengers, they were like, by the time they got to me, they're like, well, yeah, we have no options. We just have one thing.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty cool. And
the cabin wasn't even full. Like, there was two empties. I was just like, this is just poor planning on your part. And, you know, I tweeted at AA, and you know, they took it to a private message, but they gave a really non-committal answer on the whole thing.
What equipment do they use? Is it a 7.6?
It's a 7.52.
So there's only 16 seats?
Yeah, so and two of them are blocked.
And are they retrofitted with lie flats?
They have the Continental seat.
Okay. So, I didn't realize they had retrofitted those yet.
They did retrofit those. They've got the co-seat. They have no Wi-Fi. They have no screens. Like, why you would go through all that effort and not put those two things? I just don't understand how AA thinks they're competitive without Wi-Fi at this point.
Well, and wasn't the deal with the screens like they were saving weight on the IFE boxes and they hand out like tablets, right?
Yeah, they do.
I think that was the thinking, because that's even the case on their like retrofits with new seats, like brand new seats. These
are new seats, and 7.6s all have new seats, right? Same thing. And basically, their thought process is like, we're not going to keep – so 3 years ago, they're like, well, we're only going to keep these planes for a few years, so that's why we're doing this. 3 years later, they are still flying, and there's no short-term plan to replace them all.
Oh, but the 7.7Ws have screens and a nice seat and all these things.
The 7.7Ws, the 7.7.2s, and the 7.8s.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just feel like they do everything half-assed.
And do they – so was the food any good, though, since you didn't have a choice?
I don't know. I just skipped the meal. Like, it wasn't even anything I would even consider eating. I'm like, I'll just sleep. Yeah. I mean, it was just – I was just beside myself because I don't think I've ever had an experience like that on particularly a paid business class ticket, let alone any business class ticket.
Yeah. And the Twitter account didn't offer any kind of –
No.
We're sorry.
No, I mean, they're like, oh, well, sorry we disappointed you. But, like, no, like, yeah, maybe we screwed up. No, nothing like that.
It's kind of amazing. Because I've been on flights where they've run out of meals, but it's usually, like, in business class. But it's usually, like, one option, and they'll still have two or three others.
Right. There are four options on the menu. I was, like, number 13 to place an order and down to one thing.
So did they only load like two of each or three of each?
I can only assume that they loaded very lightly to not account like the and you know like candidly, I don't think I've ever been on an international flight where they have run out of options.
Wow.
And maybe that's just my luck, but I mean I've probably done a couple hundred at this point.
Yeah.
So this was the first, and like to only be down to one option, like that's what I expect in like last row of domestic first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you just say, I'll take whatever you have. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
That sucks, man. Are you flying them back over?
Eventually. Eventually, but yeah. But, I mean, and the Wi-Fi thing still gets me. I'm like, I don't understand how you're selling a premium product, allegedly premium product, without Wi-Fi at this point when you're appealing to business travelers.
Yeah, that's crazy. And how full was the back of the plane? Did you get a chance to go back there?
I had looked at the seat map. I think it was probably like 70 to 80%.
Okay. That's not terrible. I mean, for summer travel though, it's a little light, but
Yeah, I mean, who knows what the reality is. But, you know, that flight is strange because at one point it was a 7-8, then it went to a 7-6, and when I bought it, it was a 7-6. And then about a month and a half ago, they changed it to 7-5.
Yikes. So it must not be doing fantastic.
No.
Yeah.
No. Or they needed the 7-6 for something else.
Yep.
And I also learned that AA is just freaking amazed me. So I was likely going to misconnect in Chicago because we left Manchester late because they couldn't figure out how to fuel the plane ahead of time. And then usual ground delays in Chicago. So they automatically protected me on a later flight. So I had a connection and they protected me on a nonstop. I'm like, great. So I managed to clear security and everything quickly enough. So I walked into the club. I'm like, you guys already protect me on the nonstop. Can you just confirm me on that? She's like, oh no, because your other flight hasn't started boarding yet. Like, but you already confirmed me. She's like, nope. And she actually went and removed the segment.
From your record?
From my record.
Holy crap. So what, nonstop, they're going to put you on Manchester, Newark, on United?
No. I was in Chicago at this point.
Oh, gotcha.
I was in Chicago at this point. So my onward from Chicago was, like, I had a connection because I was actually going to Minneapolis. So I had a connection. But they confirmed me on the nonstop. I'm like, great. I'll just cool my heels for a little bit and take the nonstop. No. So if anyone else is in that situation, miss the flight and then let them confirm you.
Jeez. Making life difficult one step at a time.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like the most surliest self-entitled agents. I think they've been hiring people from Delta.
Oh, man. Well, hopefully your experience going back isn't as bad.
Yeah, we'll see. I expect to be very underwhelmed and disappointed. So if I go in with that, it can only get better.
It's only up from here, right?
Exactly.
Well, I think that's a show. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't really have much more to talk about.
Yeah, me either. So for our listeners, if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, @dotslines, we're at moredotsmorelines.com. Leave us a comment. We have a Patreon account. You can find that link on moredotsmorelines.com. You can leave us an iTunes review if you'd like, or just tweet us. We'd love to hear from you. And until next time, happy travels. Bye-bye.
Take care.